Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, I'm Sarah Fischko, and these are the Fischko Files. Each week, I put together a personal essay on music, art, culture, and media. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. So please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC podcasts are supported by Holy Name Hospital in Teaneck, New Jersey, providing comprehensive centers in cardiovascular services, interventional radiology, and cancer care. More information at www.holyname.org.
I remember when the tune from Charlie Chaplin's Limelight finally became a hit in 1972, 20 years after the film had opened. McCarthyism had chased him out of the country in the 50s, and his popularity had diminished, but not the popularity of the tramp, never the early silent Charlie. Chaplin's tramp is still the most emblematic, familiar image in the world. The films are in something of a resurgence now, as new DVD restorations have appeared, and a new documentary on Chaplin is making its way around the world. And a restored version of Chaplin's Modern Times is opening in New York next week, too. Modern Times is an interesting case. A nearly silent film made in 1936, almost a decade after sound had turned Hollywood upside down. In fact, what an incredible decade that was, those years just after 1927, when The Jazz Singer forced filmmakers to completely rethink how films were made.
Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet. Wait a minute, I tell you.
Writers and filmmakers have understandably made much out of this period, especially the film Singin' in the Rain, which poked wonderful fun at the technical pitfalls for the silent film star who suddenly opened her mouth.
What's the big idea? Am I dumb or something?
This was, of course, the start of something big, but it was the end of something, too.
It was a huge, incredibly sudden shutting down of a kind of expressiveness.
Film critic and filmmaker Richard Schickel's new film, Charlie, The Life and Art of Charles Chaplin, is coming to New York in February.
People like George Lucas have said to me that he didn't feel that visually the movies have yet recovered from the impact of sound coming to them. The visual language of movies was more sophisticated then than they've become since. And there may be something in that.
One of the things that happened is that the choreographic quality of movies changed.
People started grouping around hidden microphones. You know, they have a microphone in a flower pot, and there'd be four people sitting around a table trying to talk into the microphone. And, you know, that just rendered the movies incredibly static very quickly.
Charles Chaplin resisted the change with a vengeance. Moving pictures need sound, he said in 1928, as much as Beethoven's symphonies need lyrics.
He was not alone in resisting sound. I mean, there were theoreticians who resisted it. There were certainly people who made movies who resisted it.
In modern times, there are copious amounts of music, including another tune by Chaplin, sound effects, and even some talking, which comes from a 1984-ish screen occupied by the company president, who observes Charlie on his breaks.
Hey, quit stalling, get back to work!
And barks out commands to the factory workers.
Section 5, speed her up, fall 1.
But Charlie and co-workers and his partner, Paulette Goddard, never talk. This approach resulted in one of the most famous images in the history of cinema, Charlie in the gears of the assembly line.
You know, it's just a brilliant comic sequence. And I included that, the eating machine, which is kind of a scary statement about dehumanization.
Don't stop for lunch. Be ahead of your competitor.
In that scene, Charlie is used to test a machine that spoon-feeds workers.
Notice the revolving plate with the automatic food pusher.
Wipes their mouths, presents the next course, spins the corn cob for the eater. Chaplin was able to make statements about industrial politics and make us laugh. This was less easy once he conceded that sound had truly arrived. There was, after all, really no way to make the tramp talk. Chaplin wrote in his autobiography, "I had thought of possible voices for the tramp, whether he should speak in monosyllables or just mumble, but it was no use. if I talked, I would become like any other comedian.
I think he perhaps knew that he did not have a great voice for the movies. I mean, his voice was very kind of cultivated, a little bit high-pitched. It's not a voice that is appropriate to his great character, to the tramp.
The closest he gets is a scene in Modern Times in which the tramp sings a nonsense song to a restless cafe crowd, making up the words as he goes. So in that strange combination of silence and sound, you might have even called it a transitional film, if the transition hadn't already been made years before. Modern Times, after all, was made 5 years after Little Caesar, 3 years after King Kong and 42nd Street.
That was a path that had to dwindle. I mean, there came a moment where Chaplin had to talk.
And at that point, he phased out the tramp. In fact, in Modern Times, the tramp, along with his waif-like pal, Paulette Goddard, walked down the road for the last time.
The tramp is a figure that's uniquely dependent upon there being an open road for him to stroll down at the end of the movie. That figure was, among other things, a great exemplar of personal freedom. You just up and go. Well, it got harder and harder to up and go in the 30s and 40s in this country and in every country. You know, there were oppressive dictators on every hand. There was industrialism. I think the world was really closing in on the tramp, and his demise as a comic figure was, I think, inevitable.
It's poignant to think of Chaplin making a film about man surviving the modern age with humanity intact, all the while holding on to his own methods and his own humanity as he watched technology move forward. A look at a film like Modern Times tells us a lot about those mysterious years of tumultuous change, when films stopped looking like dances and started sounding like real life. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fischko. Thanks for listening to The Fischko Files from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member today at WNYC.org. See you next week for another installment of The Fischko Files from WNYC, New York Public Radio.